Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Dottino, I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag GiantsChat on Twitter. We'll be joined by Dave Burkett from the Detroit Free Press. He covers the Lions, also a Hall of Fame voter. So you can talk some overall NFL stuff with him as well. He'll be joining us in just a minute. So go to the Giants mobile app or Giants.com to check out the full program there. And Paul, we're kind of going through the Giants team by team. Last year, the Giants made the playoffs along with the Detroit Lions, who had a surprise year and held on despite losing their final three games of the year.
Matt Stafford was terrific. And, you know, he has become one of the comeback specialists now in this league over the last couple of years. And, you know, whether or not he can continue to pull that team out of the fire time after time and make them a playoff team again remains to be seen. I think that's one of the key questions as you look at the Lions this year. They will be playing the Giants in week number two of the regular season, Monday night, September the 18th, right across the parking lot at MetLife Stadium. And for that reason, they're next up on our list.
And if you want to check out the interview, go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app right now to check it out. And now we're joined by Dave Burkett for the Detroit Free Press, covers the Lions, also a voter for the NFL Hall of Fame. Dave, you got John Schmelk and Paul Dottino here in beautiful East Rutherford, New Jersey. How are you this morning?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
We're doing fantastic. And it's funny, I'm putting together these team profiles for all the Giants opponents on the websites over the next couple of weeks. And I looked at all the Lions' rankings and numbers last year, and they were seemingly average in almost every single category except for a couple, somewhere between like 15 and 19. The question is, what can they do to go from being average in those categories to becoming above average or good?
Well, you know, I think the one big thing, at least the thing that they're banking on, is staying healthy in the running game a little bit. You know, they lost Amir Abdullah in the first half of the second game of the season, and their running game just was – it was never the same, you know, and they're not a huge run team to begin with. But the fact that they lost Abdullah, Theo Riddick went out later in the year. Both those guys are recovering from surgeries. That really set them back. And just, you know, it gave one less thing that defenses really had to worry about. And Abdullah has looked pretty healthy this spring. Riddick is the guy that's still coming off those surgeries. But the Lions need to get something consistent out of that running game. They don't need a 1,500-yard rusher for the season. You know, they don't need Abdullah to get 100 yards every game. They just need him to be a consistent threat back there. And defenses have to pay attention to him. So if they can do that, you know, they think that's going to help other areas of their offense, which in turn will help other areas of their defense.
Yeah, you know, Dave, you're right. And when I mentioned them being average in a lot of categories, rushing is one of the categories, like you mentioned, where they were very poor last year, 30th in the league in rush yards per game. And since Amir Abdullah has struggled to stay healthy, I was surprised that in such a deep running back draft, the Lions didn't try to bring in a running back to give them a little bit of a backup plan if Abdullah can't stay healthy this year.
Yeah, no, you and me both. I mean, I thought they'd do a little bit more to, you know, sort of ensure their offense, because, look, Abdullah's had – He's had two surgeries now in the past 16 months. He finished his rookie year, had surgery to correct his labrum, fix his labrum in his shoulder after his rookie season. And then last year, obviously, had the Liz Frank surgery. So, you know, I think when you have a young running back like that, even though they're very high on him and they think he can be a very effective player for them, I just thought they needed to do a little bit more with, you know, Theo Riddick had surgery on both wrists. So their top two running backs have had a combined four surgeries here in the last 18 months. Not a good thing. They do have Zach Zinner. They do have Dwayne Washington. You know, they added Matt Asiata, sort of a veteran, you know, presence, I guess, some insurance that way this spring. But, you know, he's still got a ways to go to make the team.
I want to ask you about the quarterback, because we know about Stafford's comeback ability the last couple of years. He's certainly, you know, authored a bunch of those kinds of games. If you look at his career numbers, so many 4,000-yard seasons, nobody ever talks about him being a top five, maybe even a top 10 quarterback in this game. But if you go by the pure numbers, his numbers are pretty darn scary. In fact, the last two seasons, he's had a completion percentage over 65% to go with the 4,000-plus yards and the two dozen touchdown passes. How good is Matt Stafford? Have we seen the best of him? Is there a raising of his level that can take this team to new heights?
Yeah, you know, critics would you know, counter that by saying he's stat Padford. You know, I mean, a lot of those numbers early on in his career, they would play games with the Lions playing catch up. Well, I think Matt has taken a step forward here the last, you know, year and a half, season and a half under Jim Bob Cooter, with him as the offensive coordinator. Those two just seem to see the game very similarly. You know, they've, and Stafford has, what he's really done, I think, is he's cut down on some of the risky throws. He cut down dramatically on his interceptions. I know he finished up with 10 last year, but really, you know, until he got hurt late in the season, he hurt the middle finger on his throwing hand, and he played with that the final, you know, 3.5 games of the regular season. You know, he wasn't going to win the MVP, but he was certainly in that discussion with all the late game comebacks that he had. So he's done some good things of late to, you know, sort of make that leap from this guy that's just putting up great numbers and has all the talent, but maybe doesn't quite piece everything together to you know, maybe truly being one of those top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. I wouldn't put him in the Aaron Rodgers, you know, category. He's not in Tom Brady category, obviously, but he's a guy that the Lions feel, you know, that they can certainly win with, and that he can really do things to help the talent on the offense, which, you know, in some areas may not stack up to some of the other teams in the NFL.
We're talking to Dave Burkett, Detroit Free Press. And, Dave, I want to follow up on Stafford real quick. And I think the type of transformation in the game you're talking about, do you think it had something to do with the fact that Calvin Johnson retired and he didn't have that one uber weapon, you know, maybe one of the best wide receivers in the last 10 to 15 years, where he could always go to with the football, and instead he had to trust the system, trust his reads, trust the routes to develop, and spread the ball around to a bunch of different guys?
I think that's just coincidence. You know, a lot of people looked at that last year, but, you know, look, when you lose one of the best receivers to ever play in the NFL, I don't think that on its face makes you better. I think the transformation actually started, you know, somewhere in that 2015 season. He had a really bad start to the season. The Lions started 1-7. You know, him and Joe Lombardi, the former offensive coordinator, just did not see things on the same page. And then when they made that change at midseason, you know, when they flew off to London, Jim Bob Cooter took over as offensive coordinator. I think that's where the transformation in Stafford's game started. You know, he was a turnover machine that first half of the season. And then really the second half he had Calvin, but he was just making smarter decisions, better decisions. The team was winning. That carried over to last year. I think he realized that, you know what, I don't have to do everything on my own. It's okay to nickel and dime it every once in a while and move the ball downfield. And, you know, when push comes to shove late in game situations, I can make those throws. So I just think it was, you know, that light bulb, you know, turning on in his head, essentially, more than it was losing Calvin Johnson.
Well, you know, whether it's Stafford or the running backs doing any damage, it all starts with the O-line, and they've rebuilt their O-line with the two tackles now. Robinson coming in to play left tackle after that deal, and Wagner, the former Raven, is going to be the right tackle. How much do they believe in these guys? Because those bookend tackles, if they don't get it done, the Lions are going to have a lot of trouble no matter who's playing quarterback.
And, of course, the loss of Taylor Decker there, too, which is going to be a big
part of their offensive
line. That's
why Robinson's out there, left tackle.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, you look at the resources that Bob Quinn has sunk into the offensive line here the last 2 years. You know, he drafted Decker and Graham Glasgow with his first three picks last season. He signed T.J. Lang and he signed Rick Wagner this offseason. So they've really invested a lot into that offensive line. They wanted to you know, they feel that that's a key part of the offense, obviously, and they wanted to keep Matthew Stafford protected. They wanted to do everything they could to make this offense a really, really solid unit. And the Decker loss hurts. I mean, look, they took a flyer on Greg Robinson. Haven't seen him yet. You know, he got in. The trade went down before the last minicamp practice, so he hasn't even practiced with the team yet. Same with Cyrus Kwanjo, who they signed the same day. You know, he's coming off hip surgery. They signed him right before the end. So they're really – Decker's going to miss probably the first half of the season, and you know, they're going to open that left tackle job up to whoever wins it. Those two, and I throw Corey Robinson's name at you too. He was sort of the swing tackle for the Lions last year. He's coming off foot surgery, so they have a lot of questions at the left tackle position. Right guard, where T.J. Lang is going to play, he's coming off hip surgery and hasn't practiced with the team yet. So, you know, Travis Swanson, their center, missed the last five games of the season last year with a concussion. So I think this, you know, if everyone was healthy, they have the makings of what could be a really good offensive line, but they do have a lot of injury concerns on that offensive front right now.
Yeah, and please correct me if you disagree with me on this. You know, Eric Ebron was a guy that got picked in the top 15. He's been banged up since he's been in the league, kind of in and out. Nothing, you know, debilitating, but it always seems like he's questionable on the injury report every other week. Is the team losing a little bit of patience for when he's going to break out? I know net last year was kind of a good step in the right direction, but then there were some rumors heading into the draft. They were looking to draft another tight end early in the draft to complement him. Where does the organization stand right now on Ebron and his progress?
No, yeah, I think they're still, you know, they still have high expectations for Ebron. And, you know, they picked up his fifth-year option. They, They certainly think that he's going to be a big part of their offense this year. You're right. They were looking to upgrade that unit, and they did. I mean, maybe not in the way that some people outside the organization expected, but, you know, they signed Darren Fells this offseason. They drafted Michael Roberts in the fourth round. I think what you're going to see from the Lions this year is they're going to play more out of a two tight end set. You know, they used Anquan Boldin 80% of the time as their third receiver last year, and now they're going to have a little more flexibility with their offense. I think, you know, Fells is such a good blocker, and he's going to help the run game. You're going to see Fells and Ebron play a lot together. You know, they can mix and match. And Kenny Galladay, their rookie third-round receiver, he can play outside. You can play Tate in the slot. Maybe it's a different receiver that you can play in the slot and keep Tate outside. So Ebron's going to be a big part of this offense. You know, I would expect his numbers to tick up a little bit more this year. The two big things with him over the course of his career have been drops and injuries. And those are two things that, you know, if he's going to reach that level that the Lions thought he could be when they took him 10th overall ahead of Odell Beckham, you know, he's going to have to correct those two things.
You know, it's actually funny. A lot of Giant fans called the same show that year and wanted them to take Eric Ebron. Needless to say, I think they're pretty happy with how it worked out.
And may I say, I fought against that tooth and nail. Wanted no part of Ebron. No part of him. And I was right.
Ebron will never live that down, unfortunately, for him. I mean, the players that the Lions drafted or they took him ahead of were Odell Beckham and Aaron Donald. And, you know, look, they wanted an offensive weapon, so they were going to – you know, there were plenty of people who liked Odell Beckham. I can tell you with 100% certainty that Jim Caldwell had a high grade on him. People in the scouting department did, but they just went the Ebron road. And yeah, I think they if they could do that one over again, they'd probably take one of those two guys.
Quick comment more on offense. I really want to flop with the defense for a real question. Anquan Boldin, they mentioned on Sirius NFL Radio this morning, he claims he's going to sign with a team right before training camp, and he'd like to go to a team in Florida close to his home. So I guess that rules the Lions out. Yes?
Yeah. Well, some people close to him had told me before that he kind of wanted to, you know, this might be his last season. If he could stay close to home, I think that'd be ideal. I don't know that it's going to be Florida. Jim Caldwell did say last week, I asked him about it, and he sort of, you know, he downplayed the notion that the Lions would bring him back. He said the Lions are happy with what they have at the receiving core right now. So I don't expect Anquan Boldin to be back in a Lions uniform, though that door is not completely closed.
All right, let's flop the defense. They take Davis, the middle linebacker, with the number one pick, a guy who was beating up some in college, but certainly has a tremendous skill set. And it looks like, I mean, they're going to plug him right in. He's going to start. He's going to have to be a big player for them right away.
Yeah, look, the linebacking unit was the Lions' weak spot on defense last year. They lost DeAndre Levy early in the season. You know, Josh Bynes, John Bostic, some of their other depth guys were hurt and couldn't play. So it was just a huge position of need. And by drafting Jared Davis, a guy they really like both on and off the field, they're going to move Tahir Whitehead, their starting middle linebacker last year, to the outside. They also signed Paul Warlow. But Davis is really, you know, he's going to be a linchpin for them. I mean, he's calling the plays from the start. They're putting a lot on his plate. You know, he's got a couple good players in front of him in Haloti Ngata and Ziggy Ansah. The Lions have some depth in the secondary, but it's a lot to entrust all those duties to a rookie, but they think that Davis can handle that.
And you know what? The Lions might have five different players on the field in sub-package than they had last year. If Tabor's out there, DJ Hayden, you mentioned a couple of linebackers, Cornelius Washington. They've really made a lot of changes here to try to, I think, turn this into a more playmaking defense, you think, try to force a few more turnovers?
You know, that was a big emphasis this offseason. I mean, I think what they did more than anything is they added some good depth options. I still look at this defense as maybe lacking some of those, you know, elite playmakers. I mean, Darius Slay is a really good cornerback for them, but he's had two interceptions each of the last few years. You know, yeah. Ziggy Ansah, I think he's their one true playmaker. You know, he was hurt all of last year, didn't put up the sack numbers that everybody thought. I think you'll see him back to, you know, sort of being the pass rusher that everyone thought. But they don't really have another true pass rusher up front. They have some good depth. They're going to rotate a lot of players, but to me, I still think this defense lacks. They need one more sort of elite playmaker in my eyes to really be that team that I think could challenge in the NFC.
Yeah, and I'm going to follow up. As you mentioned Ziggy Ansah, to me, he is the elite playmaker. And last year, I think he had the high ankle sprain early, right, and that kind of hampered him the whole year, and he never really got going. I think he had only two or three sacks over the course of the whole year. I guess the expectation is that he's going to get back to that double-digit sack guy, because I think that's what the Lions really need if they want that defense to take another step, right?
Right, and they, you know, they're certainly counting on that. I mean, they've handled Ansah with some care this spring. He didn't do everything in OTAs. He was out there in in minicamp, and he didn't have surgery. He's healthy, but they're taking things slowly with him just to be certain. But you're right, Ansa was, you know, he had such a good 2015, and he didn't live up to it last year because he got hurt. He legitimately got hurt the first series of the second game, and that thing dragged on all year. So it wasn't until the very end of the season when he was right. He had two sacks in the Lions playoff loss. I think that was a glimpse of, you know, what you'll see this year if he stays healthy.
All right, I'm going to go off the board for just a second. I don't know. Were you still
no,
going?
Go ahead.
I'm going to go off the board for just a second and ask you about Devin Taylor, because the Giants, signed him now about a month or so ago, and, you know, they're looking at him as a rotational defensive end who's going to help the depth chart there at the pass rush spot. I'd love to hear your thoughts on him, because I've heard a real variety of reviews, quite frankly mixed. Some good, some still questionable. I'd like to hear your account on what you think of him as a player and how he will help the Giants.
You know, I think if you're counting on a lot of sacks out of him, you're probably looking in the wrong, you know, department. I mean, I think he can be just a solid rotational guy. He was strictly a left end for the Lions. He was a solid player against the run, big and long. But he's not much of a pass rusher. 2 years ago, he had a career high for sacks, but I think that was somewhat of a product of, you know, teams starting to gang up on Ansa a little bit and some quarterbacks kind of sliding into his grasp. Mm-hmm. So, I think he can be a rotational guy. He's more a third or fourth defensive end, though, in my eyes, than he is a starter.
Final question for me, NFC North in general, you take a look at that division. You know, the Vikings started, you know, on fire last year. Then all of a sudden the injuries to their offensive line basically debilitated that team. The Lions had that unbelievable stretch in the middle of the year. They ended slow, but they still managed to make the playoffs. Then, of course, you have Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. And it's funny, the Packers have so many holes on their roster, but Rodgers is just so good he overcomes all of them.
He really does.
How do you see the NFC North playing out this year? And do you think maybe the Bears can make a little bit of noise? I know that's probably unlikely.
I'll answer that last question first and say no. They're still a ways away.
Yeah,
I don't
agree.
You know, Trubisky, we'll see. But no, look, man, if you have Aaron Rodgers, right, because I agree with you 100% on what you said, that the Packers are not this, like, dominant team that you look at across the board and say, wow, this team, you know, should be contending for a Super Bowl. But then you look at Aaron Rodgers and you say, this is the best quarterback or one of the two best quarterbacks in the NFL. So as long as he's still throwing the ball for the Packers, I'll make the Packers the favorite in the division. And I think the Lions and the Vikings are – they'll be similarly competitive this year. You know, the Vikings have a better defense. The Lions, in theory, should have a better offense. Though I do like what Minnesota did on that offensive line to strengthen its weak part up front. So I think both those teams are sort of, you know, in the 8-9 win mix, maybe 7-8-9 wins, depending on how injuries and other things shake out, and they're still chasing the Packers at the end of the day.
Real quick follow-up. I know some people talked about maybe at some point last year I heard rumblings, I think, about maybe them moving on from Caldwell. How well does he have to do this year to sustain that position and be back for another season at head coach?
Yeah, you know, it's still a little bit of a mystery because, look, you know, Lions obviously hire Bob Quinn, and he comes from New England. There's that specter of Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia hanging out there, and, you know, he keeps Caldwell the first year, and they have a pretty good season. They make the playoffs at the very least, but finish in a disappointing fashion. Jim Caldwell right now is still on the final year of his contract, so maybe there's a chance that the Lions give him some sort of short-term extension this summer. It wouldn't surprise me. That hasn't happened to this point, at least not that anyone's aware of. But if he's on the last year of his deal, and maybe even if he's not, you know, I think the Lions need to make the playoffs and maybe even make a little bit of noise in the postseason for him to return. Right. So him and Bob Quinn, they get along well. I think Jim Caldwell has, you know, they've had some injuries to overcome last year, and I thought he did a pretty good job with this team last year to get them to 9-7 and to get them into the playoffs. But there's no doubt that with that stuff still hanging over his head, the Lions need to win in order for him to keep his job.
Well, I'll tell you, they're going to play the Giants in week two of the regular season, and it sounds like they got a lot of questions to figure out. And, I always like to play teams that have a lot of questions early in the season because they don't have time to figure them out when you're playing them. And so that should be a lot of fun, I think.
Especially with the questions on the offensive line.
Exactly.
And the Giants' strength.
Exactly.
Up on defense, you know, you'd think that that'd be a good time for the Giants to get the Lions.
Yeah.
Dave, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Enjoy your month or so off before we all have to get back to the grind at training camp at the end of the month. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
No problem, guys. Talk to you again.
Awesome job by Dave Burkett, Detroit Free Press. Fantastic information, good stuff. And, of course, we mentioned the second game of the season and this Giants home opener
It is.
Monday night against the Detroit Lions.
It is.
And I'm sure Olivier Vernon will be licking his chops knowing that Taylor Decker will not be there. And it'll either be Greg Robinson, who lost the left tackle job in L.A. last year, or it'll be Cyrus Quandro, who's coming off hip surgery and was cut by the Bills and has some off-the-field issues.
I mean, you know, I look at the schedule, John, which we have on the board over here, and I see a Cowboy team that has a lot of questions on defense. And then week number two, a Lions team that certainly has a lot of questions to solve at linebacker and at the offensive line spot and maybe even the running back spot. I mean, we don't know exactly if those guys are going to get through camp. And,
well, that's why I asked the question, how they didn't get somebody in case Amir Abdullah got hurt. It confuses me. I don't understand why you wouldn't pick a running back in the fourth or fifth round as a backup measure. I don't get it.
I do believe Rashad Jennings is in the mix in Detroit.
Oh, okay.
But that is
good for him if that happens.
That is quite premature. He's still got some dancing recitals to go through yet.
He's done with that, isn't he?
He's doing the tour.
Oh, what? I don't even know what that is.
He's doing the tour. Rashad Jennings won the award. He got the Dancing with the Stars championship.
Correct.
And then what they do is they take a tour with like the top three finalists, and they actually go on tour.
Really?
And they tour a bunch of arenas and stuff. I know Rashad is still in shape. I know he's looking forward to playing, but right now he's doing the tour. So I would think he would be one of those guys. Wherever he lands, he's probably going to sign right before training camp. He's not going to be one of those guys to sign early. He's going to sign closer to the beginning of the season, or again, maybe sometime during training camp. And I do believe that the Lions would be in the mix for him. But my point is, games one and two, if you're the Giants, you got to fatten up on these teams. You got to beat Dallas and you got to beat Detroit. You got to start 2-0.
I hesitate to say you have to fatten up on a team that went 13-3 last year and still returning most of their starters. Don't make it seem like it's an easy game. You know, the Cowboys going to be favored in that game in Vegas.
Good. Let them be.
I'm just telling you, don't try to make fans think that it's an easy game. It's not an easy game.
I think if you're the Giants, you have to be determined and think you're 2-0 coming out of Dallas and the home game with Detroit.
Of course you think so, but to expect to win on the road against a division opponent, I mean, it's a division opponent. Those games are always tough.
I've never been to Vegas, but if I were to be in Vegas, I would be putting quite a lot of lettuce on the Giants in game number one. I'm just saying. We got calls.
201-939-4513. Let's get right to it and say hi to Dave in Connecticut first. Dave, what's going on, pal?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well, Dave.
Hello.
What's going on with you?
I'm good. Listen, I wanted to call in because I haven't heard anything yet regarding the mandatory minicamp about this new kid, fastest kid in college, Kevin Snead. Is that how I pronounce it correctly?
Yeah, you got it right.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's he can run fast in a straight line, but what's the expectations for him? Is he going to lock to have that position as a, you know, punt returner, kick returner? I mean,
he's really good at running in a straight line. You're right.
I know it's not about how fast you can run, it's how you can run fast, something like that. Maybe, you know, is he?
You like that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I think it was the lawnmower commercial.
Dave, here's the thing. Look,
How does he develop to be? Can he be nasty? I'm hoping we have a threat.
He is
there that people are afraid of.
Dave, right? He is extremely raw. He's a guy that if he's on the 53, I'd be surprised. If anything, he's a practice squad guy. If they see something with the speed to develop. But if you take a look at what he did in college as a football player, his production was extremely limited. He didn't even play a whole lot of snaps.
No.
He's really learning the game as he's here at the pro level. So I would not expect anything from him in his first season. And the Giants can see if he develops enough where they think maybe a few years down the line he might be able to give him something. I think that's the best way to put it.
Here's what I would do, okay? He is you know, Janoris Jenkins, I apologize, but this guy who ran the 4.22 in the 40 is a jackrabbit. He really is. And so what I would do is he would be on my practice squad, and he would be on my scout team. And what I would do is I would line him up at receiver. I would line him up at slot.
He can make believe he's DeSean
Jackson.
I would
line him up at halfback,
sure.
And I would line him up at quarterback. I would put him at all those different skill positions on the field.
Quarterback?
Well, because there are some running quarterbacks in this league. And what I would do is he'd be on my practice squad as the perfect scout team guy to give my starting defense a look at pure speed. And that's what he would be for me. He would be a terrific scout team stand-in, if you will, kind of like a stunt double, you know, in the movies. He'd be a great stunt double for practicing against speed because you can't teach speed.
That's true.
You can't teach it.
You can't teach it.
So that's what I would do with him.
You also can't teach vision when it comes to, you know, being a punt returner, kick returner, which I thought that was he's being brought in for. Which, and I think everything you said, absolutely, to practice against someone with that skill set, that's what you need, and hopefully he develops. But are we sticking with, what, Dwayne Harris? Are we putting OBJ back there sometimes? Is that kind of the plan, or see who shakes out?
I think kick return, it's Harris for sure. And they might maybe use one of the backup running backs, like maybe Gallman is a guy they could use back there at some point, like they tried to use Perkins last year. But a punt, I think Harris is in the mix. I think they'll use Beckham in spots.
Yep.
I'll tell you what, Sterling Shepard caught an awful lot of punts during the course of spring.
He did.
Don't know if that's going to happen in the regular season.
I don't know either.
But he was all back there an awful lot. And undrafted free agent Travis Rudolph caught probably more punts than anybody over the course of the spring. So those are the guys that I think are in the mix there. Snead caught a couple, but he wasn't one of the primary guys back there in spring practice.
Yeah, they got a lot of options at receiver and at returner. So to me, he's looking to climb over a bunch of guys if he's going to make it, which is another reason why I don't think he does. I think he's got value on the practice squad.
Okay, cool. Good to know. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for the call, Dave. I appreciate it, man. We always like touching the back of the roster guys for you.
Oh, why not? This is the time to do it.
Hey, look, he is fast, though. I mean, the kid can run. He's got some speed on him. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're a good football player. Otherwise, Usain Bolt would have been in the league for the last 8 years.
Yeah. Well, Renato Nehemiah was, and Bob Hayes was. I mean, there have been guys who have done it. Willie Gault. There have been guys who have done it.
How tall is Usain Bolt, anyway? He looks like a really tall guy. He's got to be, what, 6'3", 6'4"?
I was going to say probably 6'1". I don't think he's that tall.
He looks really tall, though.
Does
he's
he to you?
Long. Yeah, he does to me. Let me see if I'm
– I don't think I if he was that tall and his legs were long, he could not possibly run that fast.
He's 6'5".
Is he really?
6'5", 207.
Then that's insane. That's insane. He's a freak.
Yes, that's why he wins the gold medals all the time. He is a freak.
Yes.
That is correct.
Yes.
So he's actually that's great size for a wide receiver.
How do you run what he runs with long legs?
He's got big strides. Randy Moss used to be really big. He ran really fast.
Not world class.
Well, no. And Bolt is probably, I mean, he's by far probably the fastest human that's ever lived, to be quite honest with you.
Carl Lewis was for a long time.
Well, you know how it goes. And this is why it bothers me when people say, oh, well, if you play the 1950 Giants against today's, they wouldn't have a chance. The bottom line is that if those athletes then were in the modern day, they would train differently and they'd be just as good as the athletes today. You know what I mean? It's just a matter of the training methods are much different than now than what they used to
and
be.
And LT would still be the best. Next call.
Where'd that come from?
Well,
let's go to Bash in Ohio. He's up next. Hi, Bash.
How we doing, fellas?
Hi.
What's going on?
Everything's good. I'm listening to one after the show after I got off yesterday about talking about the Eagles. I think they are, like, the biggest competitors with us in the division. Not looking at Redskins or Cowboys, but the Eagles is the toughest opponent we have in our division, which all is three, as far as that.
Okay.
I mean, look, I think the Eagles are good. I think how good they are is going to be dependent on how good Carson Wentz plays, how much progress he's made from year one to year two. And if they can figure out a way to make their cornerbacks below average, I think their defense will be pretty good. The problem is that their cornerbacks might be god-awful, in which case that's really, really hard to recover from.
Yep.
Right. Now, I wanted to ask about their three wide receivers. You know, they got three here. Sean Jeffrey and Torrey Smith over there, and they still got Jordan Matthews. And I wanted to ask about those three guys, their top three receivers. How do you think they match up well against our top three corners as far as going against them twice a year? against this in a division? How do they match up with each other? They're
see,
top three and our top three as far as wide receivers and corners.
It's not so much that. It's about how much time they've got to run their routes and how much time the quarterback has to throw the ball.
And frankly, Alshon Jeffrey's so big. I mean, unless you're throwing a 6'3 corner out there, you're going to have trouble covering him one-on-one. He's just going to use his size.
You know, now, I do think that DRC could give him a difficult matchup.
The problem is that Jeffrey's an outside receiver and DRC's in the slot.
So if you were going to do that, you'd have to go matchup instead of playing your standard D.
And I agree with you. He would be the guy best suited to cover him, 100%.
But ultimately, it doesn't matter how good your three corners are. If you're not getting a pass rush, it doesn't matter. Okay? Good receivers will eat up great corners if there's no pass rush. It's just that simple.
Correct. And by the way, I'm not huge on Torrey Smith. I think he'll catch a few deep balls here and there. I don't think he's a very complete receiver that's going to, you know, catch 70 balls. You know, he'll catch 50 balls for 800 yards and have
he's
a couple
good.
Deep
he's
balls,
not great.
Things
he's
like
good.
That. He's fine. But I think Matthews and Jeffries are their first and second best wide receivers, and Smith is their deep guy who's going to be their third guy. And then remember, too, don't forget about their tight ends. Brent Celek's been around forever.
Oh,
he can
man.
Still play,
oh,
and Zach Ertz is really good.
They sure are.
Right. Ertz is pretty good.
Now, I was surprised, too, that the Eagles, much like the Lions, didn't draft a running back that could take on more of a load. You know, they drafted the Pumphrey kid, but he's smaller than Darren Sproles. So
That's why they signed Blunt.
Right.
So he's a big guy.
Yeah,
I guess. You know me. I'm not a big Blunt guy, so we're going to disagree on that.
It's all right.
Mm-hmm. I was just asking about the matchups with the corners and wide receivers. So I know they had that matchup, but I know y'all were talking about the Eagles yesterday with Sal, so I just thought I'd chime in about the Eagles a little bit.
That's all good. Thank you, Bash.
Thanks.
Now, if you want to talk about a matchup that favors the Giants, go talk about the Giants wide receivers against the Eagles corners.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think
that's trouble.
You know, and I tell you one thing, John, and I do think that the Eagles, we talked about it with Sal Powell yesterday, you know, if they put Sproles and Pumphrey on the field at the same time, that is a matchup nightmare for linebackers. And you know, even though, and Sal's right, and I agree with him, you know, 65% of the time you're in nickel nowadays, but there are going to be times where the Eagles are probably going to put both of those guys on the field in early down situations when you're not in nickel. And
they can run regular 21 personnel. You could run one tight end. Heck, with their,
you know,
with their personnel call, how about this? What if they come out in 22? What if they line up with those two jitterbugs in the backfield,
right?
Celek, Ertz, and Alshon Jeffrey? What if you run those five guys out there and you throw out of that formation? You're going to have to play base defense against it.
Yeah.
Because there's only one wide receiver.
Yeah.
And then you throw out of the big formation. How the hell are you going to cover those guys? That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Because where's the ball going? You have no idea. You have no idea where the ball's going.
You could throw it to all five guys. They all can catch.
Yep. That is true.
And Jeffrey's a good blocker, is a big wide receiver. You have two tight ends that can block and two running backs that can do everything. Whew. Hope the Eagles aren't listening. I think that's a pretty good idea.
Well, what you wind up doing is, I guess you put one safety on one tight end, linebacker on the other tight end, and then you cheat with one of the corners on one of the running backs.
I guess.
That's the only way to do it.
Yeah. Not easy.
Well, it could be tricky, especially if they run it. You know? They can cause some matchup troubles. I'm not going to disagree with that.
Now, remember, Paul said he thinks the you had the Redskins as the second-best team.
I think the
division,
Redskins,
right?
I think the Redskins are the second-best team.
I'm surprised
really
you're not that concerned about their secondary. Besides Josh Norman, their secondary is problematic, too.
Yeah, I'm not big fans, but, you know.
And we are previewing the Redskins tomorrow, by the way. Larry Michael, their play-by-play guy, will be joining
Looking
us.
Looking forward to it.
Yes.
You know, I'm a believer. Kirk Cousins converted me.
He did? Kirk, he swung you over after that pregame show last year when you killed him?
He's really good.
How about that? He changed Paul's mind.
He's
you
really
know how hard
good.
It is to change Paul's mind?
He's really
it's
good.
It's not easy.
I need evidence.
I'm proud of you, Paul.
I need evidence. I don't just change easily. I need evidence.
I'm proud of you.
Kirk Cousins has a lot of evidence, especially in a put-up-or-shut-up year when he bet on himself, and he still went out there and kicked people's butt.
And he put up.
He sure did. He's for real. He's one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. And so they're a problem. And now they got Samaje Perine to help run the ball. They're a problem.
You love Samaje Perine.
They're a problem. I sure do.
You love that guy.
I sure do.
So if you were playing fantasy football this year, you would make sure you draft Samaje Perine.
No, you wouldn't catch me anywhere in the universe playing fantasy
football.
Do you
believe when the year is over, he will have the most carries of any other player on the Redskins?
Yes.
So he will surpass Robert Kelly as their number one back.
They will be very, very happy they took him.
Double-digit touchdowns?
Probably.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Oh, he's going to have a big year. He's going to have a big year. He's for real. It is what it is. I hope he has big games against other teams.
In the NFC East.
That'd be great.
Beats up the Cowboys and Eagles.
Destroy Philly and Dallas. By all means, go for it.
All right, let's go to Christian in New York. He's up next. Hi, Christian.
Hey, guys. I've heard a lot about how Evan Engram isn't going to back down from blocking. And basically what I'm wondering is if they expect him to gain significant weight or not and end up maybe in the 250 range, because in the 230s, I feel like it'd be irresponsible to ask him to block a DN that puts his hand in the dirt. I feel like you're going to get that dude hurt.
No, but they aren't going to. No, but Christian, here's the thing. They aren't going to ask him to do that. They're not stupid. They're not going to say, you know, Evan Engram, you go out there on the edge and go one-on-one with, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence or Fletcher Cox coming off the edge.
That's not a good
idea.
Or
Derek Barnett. They're not going to do that. Ingram's, look, they say, first of all, if it's a pass play, Engram ain't blocking. Engram's going out in a pattern, okay? You don't have him here to block on pass plays. That's number one. Number two.
Well, certainly not.
Right, exactly. So he's not going to have to deal with defensive ends trying to get after the quarterback. And in the running game, you're not going to use him as a point of attack blocker. He's going to be a guy that seals the backside, gets in the way on a stretch play, just stop a guy from turning the corner. That's all you're going to ask of him. You don't need him to even be an above-average blocker. If he's a slightly below-average blocker, that's fine given the other skills that he has. And the key here is that he knows his assignments. He doesn't have any misses, which, by the way, the tight ends last year had far too many of, where they allowed free runners into the backfield. If he just gets in the way, I mean, if you watch Jason Witten, Jason Witten's not pushing people off the ball. Jason Witten is just using the angles properly.
Oh, he could do it, though.
Knowing not as much anymore. He's a little older
He's
now.
Older now, but he was real good.
If he knows his assignments, is willing to be physical, he'll do what the Giants are asking him to do. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be a very good blocker, but he will do what's necessary for him to be a two-way player for the way the Giants run their offense. That's the best way I could put it.
Yeah, John's right. He's not going to be a point-of-attack blocker. That's why they signed Ellison. You know, he basically has to be a construction cone, okay? Seriously.
No, you're right.
And I've seen these kinds of guys before.
Now, I want to stress, not one of those little cones, like the big orange, like cylinder.
Yes.
One of those cylinders.
The ones they put, like, when there's a bridge under construction.
Yes.
And they want to make sure you see the cones.
Yeah, correct.
Okay? He just has to be a construction cone. Get in the way. That's what he's got to do. Just get in the way and prevent a defender from making the play on the ball.
And Christian, go ahead, pump, finish. Pump,
no, that's it. You just don't ask him to push people back. That's not what his job is.
And don't ask him to put on 20 pounds either. Because
then
all of a sudden you're 4-4-3 tight ends running a 4-5-8, and what the hell's the point?
Exactly. Suddenly you don't have JaMychal Finley anymore.
Or Jimmy Graham. Right.
Well, you might want him in the 240s, maybe just with, you know, gaining muscle only. But I'm fine with him blocking an outside linebacker.
Sure.
It's just that any sort of D-end, not at all. I mean, I'm almost nervous about him double-teaming with a tackle on a D-end, just in case the D-end, you know, gets outside of the tackle, and then it's those two mixing it up.
But remember, in that situation, he'd only be chipping or doing something like that on his way out in a route, and that's fine. He can handle
that. Even in the run game, because they're talking about him being in line in the run game, too.
I would hold your horses on that. Let's see how that develops over the course of the early part of the season. Certainly the Giants are going to try him in those areas during the preseason to test him, to see how far can we push this? How much can we ask him to do? They'll try all of that stuff in August. And my suspicion is that's not going to be the basis of his playbook. He's going to have a lot of other stuff to do, and that stuff is going to be a much smaller portion of it. That's my suspicion. But they'll try it. You got to try it. You can't say the guy can't do it unless you see that he can't do it.
I mean, at some point, the laws of physics come into play, but I'm excited about him blocking out of a slot. That should be a really nice matchup for him.
See, now that you have something. You see, because the reason Ellison was signed was to be the point of attack blocking tight end. But you've got this guy now, this Ingram fella, okay, who in my mind should be able to take on corners or safeties who are going to try to come up and stop those end-arounds or stop those sweeps or stop those stretch plays. And I think Ingram could be really good at blocking on a wide receiver screen. So,
oh, yeah, he can handle them.
You know, there are things you can do with him as a blocker out there if you're going to put him against a safety or a corner. He should be able to knock those guys backwards. I would see no reason why not.
And I bet they expect him to add some muscle, but I wouldn't want to see him go over anything more than, like, 245.
I don't think they want him that high.
I mean, he's already pretty built in terms
solid.
Of lean muscle.
He's solid.
He isn't a guy that really has to develop his lean muscle. He's got it. I mean, he's not a skinny, slight guy when
no,
you look at him.
He's not.
I mean, yeah, he doesn't really look like Vernon, but I mean, he looks like he could add maybe a little, you know. I mean, that's normal for his age, but.
Right. I appreciate the call, Christian. Thank you. Good stuff. 201-939-4513. We have a couple open lines, folks. If you want to get in, now's the time on Big Blue Kickoff Live. I got somebody here complaining that I'm a Dallas fan because I don't think the Giants are going to blow them out on the road in week one of the season. That's
what?
Always good.
Whoa, blow them out? I didn't say they were going to blow them out.
You said it was an easy win.
No, I said I'm convinced that they will win the game. I'm blow them out? No, that's a little harsh.
Okay.
I don't know that that happens in this division in any matchup.
Well, and that was the only point I was trying to make.
Oh, I feel the Giants should be favored in the game, though.
Okay, I'm curious to see where that goes eventually. I'm guessing they will not be the favorite,
it's
though.
It's Jerry's place. Of course they're not.
I remember the Giants did beat them twice last year. So the Giants are actually built extremely well to beat the Dallas Cowboys.
The matchup is good.
It's perfect, and that's why they beat them twice last year.
Yes.
Aside for the first half of Game 2, the Giants handled the Cowboy running game extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Cowboys had 75 or 80 yards in the first half of that second game. Otherwise, they handled it really well. And the Giants have the type of corners that can disrupt the Cowboy wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Janoris Jenkins is a good physical matchup for Dez Bryant. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie is a good matchup for Cole Beasley. So the Giants actually match up extremely well with the Cowboys, which is why, in fact, you could make the argument they might match up with the Cowboys better than the other two teams in the division.
Oh, there's no question.
Especially because defensively for Dallas, they don't have those big-time pass rushers that take advantage of the Giants' offensive tackles either. So on both sides of the ball, I think the Giants' matchup against the Cowboys is fantastic, and they're really built well to beat them.
Look, in each case when they played Dallas last year, and I went into both of those games pretty much 99% guaranteeing Giants victories, I had a landslide of people telling me I was insane. And that's fine. Go right ahead. But the matchup.
Right.
The matchup is just, it was too good to ignore. Just like, same thing happened in Pittsburgh. That matchup was a dreadful matchup from the get-go.
It was.
Remember the production meeting? We had an MSG production meeting that week, and the entire table of about 10 of us, they all crucified me, wanted to bury me under 20 pounds of sand.
I was on board with you for the Giants-Pittsburgh last year.
But not the rest of the table.
I know.
And I said, guys, don't you understand? The matchup is not good. It's not about which team is better sometimes. It's just about how they fit.
Styles make games.
Just like they do fights.
Absolutely.
So
styles make games.
By the way, Mayweather over McGregor. That's not even.
Oh, in a boxing match, of course.
It's ridiculous.
I don't think Mayweather will knock him out, though. Because Mayweather's not a knockout guy. He's a guy that likes to win fights by decision. He's a great fighter.
Yeah.
But he's not a knockout guy.
No, he's not. But McGregor's probably going to go in there crazy and think he's going to do something and he's going to get caught.
Well, he might. And the problem, too, is that it's a 12-round bout. I mean, those MMA fights, Dave, do you know how long those MMA fights are? I don't even know. They're 3 rounds? He's going to be dead by the 5th round.
By the way,
his feet.
I will not spend a penny on that fight. Don't care.
I'm sure you can find that on one of your streams.
Don't care. Don't care. Don't care. Well, I swear to you, I will not see that fight. Unless it's like 10 seconds and somebody puts it on YouTube on the next day. It's ridiculous. It's hype.
That
people get
exactly
sucked into spending their money for so many different things. Spend it on the NFL.
Apparently, title fights can be 5 rounds in the MMA.
Can they?
Okay, FYI. Great. Do you know what it is? It's a spectacle. It's a spectacle. That's
no question.
All it is.
So is the dude who did the tightrope walk over Niagara Falls. That was a spectacle, too.
Did that happen recently?
Yeah, it's like a year or two ago.
No.
The Great Wall Ender.
You saw the guy. Oh, yeah. Okay, I remember that guy. Did you know that there was a guy that 10 years ago went over Niagara Falls, like, free and survived, and he tried again, like, earlier this year, and he didn't make it?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Like, he's not with us anymore?
Correct.
That's not good.
No, he tried to do it, I think, in a barrel of some kind, I think. It was in some type of enclosed thing, and nobody knew it. He, like, left a note. Like, he didn't, like, publicize it. He just did it, and his body, like, washed up downriver. It was awful.
He made it once.
The first time he made it, without anything. He just went down and dove. Yeah, I swear to God, I'm not making it up.
Why would you do it again? Once wasn't enough to prove his point?
I guess we'll have to try again.
Wow. Oh.
If you can win 2 Super Bowls, why not? Why settle for 1?
We have more calls.
Yes, we do. Let's go to Raphael in Pennsylvania. He's up next. Hi, Raphael.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
All right, loud and clear, boss.
Hello.
What's up?
All right. I was about to talk to you guys about minicamp. Other than B.J. Goodson, like the undrafted linebacker, is he making any good moves? Like, what team is he playing on? Like first, second, third? What snaps is he getting? And then just in particular, just like other random players that aren't highly publicized, like second, third. Like I know Michael Hunter. Like I've been reading stuff on Giants.com and stuff like that. And like, and then what Coach McAdoo said, he's been doing good. Yeah, I was trying to get more updates on more players and, if there's any players that maybe we should be looking out for that we don't know yet that has been making a good amount of plays and stuff like that.
You said sure. Undrafted linebacker. You're talking about Munson?
Correct, yeah.
I'll be honest with you. He didn't make any flash plays for me during
either.
The practices that we saw.
Michael Hunter, I know he mentioned, and he was with the first team for sure, yeah.
Yeah, but Calvin Munson, I was forgetting his first name, and I apologize to him. Yeah, he's an undrafted rookie free agent, and I did not see any splash plays from him at all during the course of the spring. Nothing that made your jaw drop or made you jot down something on your pad that said, I want to look at this guy. He was just a guy. I'm sorry.
What about any other, is there anybody else on the roster? I mean, anybody that's undrafted or
at linebacker? No.
No, overall. He means the whole roster.
Well, I mean, we've been talking about Travis Rudolph now for a while.
Like
he it's hard. I like to pick a dark horse every spring. I almost feel like I can't pick him because he got so much publicity.
Yeah,
he's
not really a dark horse anymore.
It's not fair to pick him, but he would be my dark horse. If I could pick one, he would be.
Devin Taylor doesn't count as a dark horse, does he?
No, because he's a veteran.
I will tell you
who I like. I like as a skill set. I'm a big fan of Nigel Tribune, the undrafted rookie free agent corner out of Iowa State. The problem is he did not really practice as well as I had hoped when I saw him during the minicamp.
And you know what? I'm going to throw out another corner that
I like.
But I like
his skill set.
I like Deshaun Amos. He actually made a bunch of plays throughout OTA and minicamp, got his hand on the ball a lot, got a couple of picks. Of the corners that are fighting for that kind of fourth and fifth corner spot, he was one of the guys that I thought made a couple more plays than a couple of the other guys. So that's one name I'll throw out for you.
Yeah, and out of the undrafted rookie free agents, I think those are the guys. I mean, Rudolph, I say Tribune, you say Amos. I don't know that any other rookie free agent really made a great impact during what we saw.
And again, I'm sure the coaches notice a lot more than we do.
Sure they do.
So they would be able to give a better answer than us. And they're not going to tell us who jumped out to them because they don't want to tip off the rest of the league.
And quite frankly, let's see what happens when the real training camp starts.
Correct. You got anything else, Raphael?
Yeah. No, that's pretty much it. I was just trying to, because I don't go to the practice or anything like that. I mean, I want to, I haven't even been to a game yet, and I am a big Giants fan. What I mean by big Giants fan, in my time, I don't really know too much about Lawrence Taylor and stuff like that. Like, I really wasn't into football. But, Ma Bradshaw, all the people that I grew up watching, you know, I know a little bit. So
great.
But yeah, I mean, that's really it. I was just trying to figure out, you know, just stuff about the Giants, seeing maybe ever again, like if there's any people that that do stick out. I mean, between the position battle between full safety, who do you think will start out of what's the two guys there?
Darian Thompson and Andrew Adams.
Yeah.
Adams and Thompson.
I think both of us would, and Raphael, thanks a lot for the call. Your line's getting a little noisy there. I think Darian Thompson is, I'd be very surprised if he wasn't the guy.
I would too. You know, the good news is, you know, he talks about himself being a younger Giants fan. It doesn't matter what generation. Every single generation of Giants fans has had at least a taste of success.
I have an idea.
So that's kind of nice.
You know, you're real bored the next 6 weeks. You got nothing to do. You're hankering for football, right?
Yeah.
Here's what you should do.
What do you want me to do?
You should have some workshops. You can charge if you want. You don't have to charge. And do some, like, Giants history workshops where you sit down with some of the younger Giant fans. You want to learn about Giants history. And you have, like, an hour a weekend or an hour a week, whenever you want to do it. And you host some Giants history workshops. We can find a sponsor for it. You know,
throw it up on the web?
Yeah. I think Dottino's Giant History Workshop. I think this is something that we can turn into.
Don't
something.
We have something called Giants Chronicles?
Yeah,
doesn't
but
that kind of do it?
That doesn't have the Dottino flair that I'm looking
that's
for.
That's for sure.
I want the Dottino flair.
Wow. Be
some,
fun.
Some anecdotes, some stories, the passion. The heartbreak.
You want to you want to oversee the production on that? We'll
no,
talk about it.
I do not. That is a one man show by Paul Dottino.
In reference to the one thing though that I would like to say about the caller, and he was asking about the undrafted rookie free agents. You know, just use the word newcomers because to be honest, guys like Devin Taylor could very well have an important impact on this team.
And I think he will, by the way.
Even though he's not an undrafted rookie free agent and he's not a drafted guy, he's a guy who kind of quietly came onto campus and could play a number of significant plays if he turns out to be as talented as he would like us to believe.
Final call of the show is my boy Bam Bam Bigginose. What's up, Bam Bam?
What's up, fellas? How are you?
You know, you're one of Paul's favorite calls, but he loved Bam Bam Bigelow.
Well, I did want to say, because you guys, I kind of hung up on you guys last time. I didn't hear the question.
What do you got?
I think it was you and Dan. It is a playoff of Bam Bam Bigelow, obviously, but also there's a restaurant in my town called Bigelow's, and a friend told me I should open up a place next door called Bigano's. That's how my Twitter name came about.
Nice.
Quick, I got a question for you guys. We were talking about the Lions before and how they passed on Odell for Ebron. The Giants really in that spot that year really could have missed. They had Odell, Aaron Donald, and Zach Martin all on the board. They're all at positions of needs at that time. Hindsight, obviously, being 2020.
Well, you know, in fairness, Bam Bam, I don't think anybody would have complained if they picked Zach Martin. That guy is going to be a let me stop short of Hall of Famer, but he will be a
perennial
multi-year Pro Bowler All-Pro. So that would not have been a bad pick. And Aaron Donald is also a multi-year Pro Bowler.
Right.
Neither one
of
those two guys would exactly
their position in the league.
Right.
I wanted Donald at the time. I actually thought Odell was going to be a bust, so it shows what I know.
And but I wanted Zach Martin. So what are you going to do?
With hindsight being 2020, if you could redo the draft, who would you take at that spot? I think I would go with Aaron Donald just because there's no shortage of playmakers on offense in the NFL, but a guy like that is a little bit more rare.
Conventional wisdom indicates you're right, but then every once in a while you get a really, really special game breaker like Odell Beckham Jr., who does so much to change what other teams are doing game plan-wise that it would be very, very hard for me not to take him, even in retrospect, as much as I love Zach Martin.
I agree, and at the time, I told you folks that the Giants were not going to take Aaron Donald, but I really liked him, and I would have thought about him, and I was high on Ebron, too, so I will happily take the hit on that, and I happily admit to my mistakes. But I can't not pick Odell Beckham Jr. He changes your whole offense. I mean, he's just that good. And frankly, even after the Giants picked him, and me and Paul, you know, talked to a lot of people down at LSU about him, not in a million years that I think he was going to be as good as he became.
No. I mean, not just a star, but literally a megastar.
Megastar.
He's a megastar.
He's the best non.
He's actually a bigger star off the field than he is on it, which is saying a lot.
And Bam, the thing about
real quick, Paul,
yeah, go ahead.
I want a prediction this year. I know it's early. Give me a prediction. What's the final record?
I usually don't touch that until the preseason games are in the books, you know, because I think
come
that
on, Paul.
It just
yeah,
isn't
I know
fair.
You're a fan.
Give me
feeling.
A range. Give me a range.
I could see the Giants winning 11 games.
If the over-under was 10 in Vegas, you're going over?
If I'm making the bet today, I'm probably going over.
I think I would go over on that too, Bam Bam.
If I'm making the bet today.
I'll see you guys in the playoffs. Have a good week.
All right.
Hey, don't wait till the playoffs, Bam Bam. We'd love to hear from you again.
Yeah, right?
Come on.
That's a long time.
It's amazing how good that draft was, though. I want to bring up that for those first. We have a couple minutes before we say goodbye.
Okay, what do you got?
That was, 2014?
This is Odell's
fourth
year.
So that'd be 2014 draft.
Yep.
Let me see.
Yeah, the difference is when you talk about a special player, an elite player who can literally change the game plan, you know, that's a different ballgame.
I mean, you can argue when all is said and done.
He changes the game
besides
plan.
Besides Lawrence Taylor, he might be the best player in Giants history. There's
a
chance.
I think all the way up to ownership, John Mara has said as much, that he has had more of an impact on any of the Giants teams since Lawrence.
All right, so here we go. Here's that draft. Clowney in the first pick. He had a couple injury years, but now he's showing the type of player he can be.
Yeah.
Greg Robinson, bust.
Mm-hmm.
Blake Bortles at 3.
He's all right.
He's fine. Sammy Watkins at 4. When he plays, he's excellent, but he's had injury issues.
Not enough.
Khalil Mack at 5. He's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Jake Matthews at 6. He's a pretty darn good offensive tackle. No argument there. Mike Evans at 7. Pretty damn good player.
Boy.
Justin Gilbert at 8. That's why the Browns are the Browns. Anthony Barr at 9. Damn good player.
Yeah.
Ebron at 10. Again, not a bad player, but certainly not worth the 10 picks so far. Mm-hmm. Taylor Lewan at 11. He's turned out to be an excellent offensive tackle.
Better than I thought he
was. I don't think
be.
The Titans complain about that.
No.
Then you have Beckham at 12. We all know about him. Aaron Donald at 13 is wonderful. The Bears took Kyle Fuller at 14. I think they'd probably want that one back if they could, but he's not a bad player.
No.
Ryan Shazier at 15, who's an excellent football player.
Loved him coming out.
Zach Martin at 16, excellent football player. And then you get some C.J. Mosley, good, not great.
Nah.
Calvin Pryor, not good. Jawan James, okay.
So top 15 we can't miss.
Yeah,
really, but
Brandon Cooks at 20 is a really good player.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Haha, Clinton Dix at 21, really good player. And then the Browns are the Browns, and they took Johnny Manziel. D. Ford hasn't really worked out for the Chiefs. He's been kind of trapped behind Tamba Ali and Justin Houston. Darqueze Dennard at 14, he hasn't worked out. Jason Verrett, Marcus Smith, Deion Buchanan, who's a very good player. Kelvin Benjamin at 28, good player. The Patriots whiffed on Dominic Easley at 29.
Yes.
Jimmy Ward, Bradley Roby, Teddy Bridgewater, now he's hurt.
Yeah.
But the top 15, wonderful group of players in there. Whew.
Holy smokes.
That's a heck of a group.
That's outstanding.
It's very comparable, actually, and this is the last word I'll say before we say goodbye.
Yes.
And let me see if I can go year by year here? Let me see. History. Here we go. We want the 2011 draft. This is my favorite draft. This might be the best draft of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you why.
Okay.
If you take out, and my computer's in Navigate here for a second, the 2011 draft had some misses on quarterbacks in the top 15, which happens from time to time. You know, teams reach on quarterbacks and, you know, things of that nature. But listen to the rest of these guys that got picked, okay?
Go ahead.
Cam Newton at 1.
Mm-hmm.
Von Miller at 2. Marcel Darius at 3. A.J. Green at 4.
Okay.
Patrick Peterson at 5.
Yeah.
Julio Jones at 6.
Oh, boy.
Aldon Smith at 7. Now, Jake Locker at 8. That's one of the misses.
Yeah.
Tyron Smith at 9. Blaine Gabbert at 10. Again, one of the misses. J.J. Watt at 11. Christian Ponder at 12. So if you take out those three quarterback misses, you have a perennial Pro Bowler. Except for Aldon Smith, who's off the field stuff, at every other selection in that
top
12.
I'm taking the other class, though.
It's darn close.
I'm taking the other class.
Some other highlights from that class, just really quickly. I'll throw out some other ones that were really good. Andy Dalton's second-round pick for the Bengals, which actually turned out – you can't argue with that as a second-round pick.
No.
Let me see what else we got here. Prince got picked at 19. Oh, Ryan Kerrigan at 16. Robert Quinn at 14.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Costanzo at 22. The Jets took Muhammad Wilkerson at 30. Excellent player.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see who else we got here. Mark Ingram, the running back, at 28.
Been banged up. But
he has been. That's true. Let's see. There were a couple of really good late ones in this draft class that I always like to look at and I get excited about. Justin Houston at 70. DeMarco Murray at 71.
Oh, man.
Those two are excellent late-round picks. I don't have to tell you how good those selections are. And then this was Richard Sherman's year, too. I'm trying to find him. Where's Richard? 154, Richard Sherman.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good draft.
Indeed. Indeed.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us tomorrow. Lance and Paul have the Redskins. Larry Michael will join us right at the top of the show for 15 minutes, 12 to 12:15, and they'll preview the Redskins for this upcoming year. And, again, it's a great division, folks. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, really, whoever wins the division, it's going to be decided by how you play against your other teams in the division. You're going to have to go. And it's funny, Dallas went 13-3 last year. All three of their losses came in the division. Mm-hmm. So that's rare. If you're going to want to win the NFC East next year, Paul, you're probably going to have to go 4-2 in the division. So it'll be very important to understand your matchups.
The AFC West is going to have a lot to say about it, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But again, you have 6 games against the NFC East and 4 games against the AFC West. So there's 10 out of your 16 games right there.
That's it right there.
And that's it. Absolutely. For Dottino, I'm Schmelk. See you tomorrow at noon on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.